You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk.
Technobite with Aki Anastasio.
Aki Anastasio, one day.
You love it, don't you?
I do. I absolutely do. Could listen to her the whole day. Who is she, by the way?
I have no idea who that is. I'd love to meet her.
Is she real or artificially intelligent?
It sounds very robotic to me. But you just never know these days. You can't distinguish between parody and fake accounts and that sort of thing.
And what was the Turing test? If you can't distinguish, then it has intelligence.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. How are you doing? Are you well?
I've never been better. The world is a good place and worth fighting for.
Loving your conversations you're having this morning. And an interesting conversation, there's the Samsung story, you know, the whole story with the Samsung Note 7 that we've heard in every single flight you board. If you've got one of these phones, you know, you better just, you're not allowed on the flight, basically.
Yeah.
And on the weekend yesterday, in fact, they held a press conference, Samsung, to basically tell the world exactly what happened and what was the problem with the Samsung Galaxy Note 7. Mm. And essentially, it was about batteries, and they said that the external casing was too small for the components inside. So basically, they basically said that the batteries were the casing, basically the battery was too large for the casing on the phone, and it caused it to overheat, according to Samsung's report. And when they switched to another different battery supplier, that battery also had a defect that caused it to overheat. But it's quite interesting how Samsung have handled this, because over the past few months, they've used about 700 Samsung researchers. They've tested more than 200,000 fully assembled devices and more than 30,000 batteries to kind of figure out what went wrong with the Note 7 phones. So I think that after a weakish start to how the story was handled, I think they've handled it pretty well. They've said, this is what the problem is. We're going back to the drawing table, so we make sure that this doesn't happen again. Mm. But I think that, you know, if we take one step back, you know, if you look at anybody's phone, when the moment you leave that phone charging for over a long period, you'll notice your phone does get warm.
Does your phone get warm? Yeah.
Every single phone gets warm. So there's all sorts of interesting.
I'm scared to charge it overnight these days.
Absolutely, electronics and that sort of thing, as manufacturers, you know, are pushed very hard to make things smaller, to output better, information and output better performance from batteries. You know, these challenges are going to happen, and it's happened to Samsung. And interestingly enough, at the same time, on the back of this announcement, next month is the Mobile World Congress. This is the big, big show that happens in Barcelona. It's as big as the one I went to in the U.S. But this is just about mobile. And the people that take center stage at the show, they launch all the new smartphones. And Samsung were the biggest at the show. There's no doubt about it. They launched all the Samsung Galaxy S5, S6, S7. And we've just learned as well today from one of the executives that they're not going to be launching the S8 at the show.
Jeez.
Which is really interesting. So I suspect what Samsung have done is, and you know, I'm not a spokesperson for Samsung, they've gone back to the drawing board and they said, listen, we need to get this right. We need to make sure that it doesn't happen again. Let's push it out later in the year and let's launch a device that's going to be amazing and that's not going to have any issues. Mm. That's the only explanation.
So what's been the effect on their bottom line? I've been very interested about that. Do you think, will there be any permanent damage to their brand?
Well, I think that people still love their brand. If you look at the S7 and the S7 Edge, it's still a fantastic device. And, you know, thank goodness there haven't been any issues with it catching a light or, you know, overheating, etc. So it's a fantastic device. And there's a reason why it's won accolades across the globe. So people still love the brand. But I think that the push to really be innovative and come up with new stuff is going to result in people tripping over. And I think that you're going to see this happening with other companies as well. I don't know if this is related to the Ford Kuga, for example, or other manufacturers, but, you know, you look at electric cars. You know, those electric cars, as I saw in the Tesla factory with my own eyes, you know, they're all packed with batteries, you know, and you know, technology is the way it is because people push the boundaries, and that's why these things happen. So we'll have to wait and see, but that's what's transpired from this one. I heard you talking about, Davos and, all the other interesting things about, inequality and everything. And that certainly was one of the topics at this year's Davos conference that happened. And, it's quite interesting to see, you know, the kind of leaders, and this is what I love about it, because they attract all the top business leaders from Google, from Facebook, from you name it, they're there and they discuss these issues. And one of my favorite guys that I absolutely love is Jack Ma. who is the founder and CEO of Alibaba. And he had some interesting things, and we've put it up on the website, all the key discussions around technology at Davos and how it's impacting the world around us as we speak. But he had some very interesting things to say about how companies change and how things evolve. And take a listen to what Jack Ma had to say. And for me, this guy's one of the most astute, down-to-earth business leaders. And if you haven't read his book yet, do so, because it's absolutely brilliant.
Next to 30 years are critical for the world. Every revolution, technology revolution takes about 50 years. The first 20 years, technology company. Next 30 years, the implication of the technology. Focus on next 30 years. The first 20 years, eBay, Amazon, Facebook, Alibaba, Google. Good. The most important is that make the technology inclusive, make the world change. Next, pay attention to those people who are 30 years old. Because those are international generation, internet generation. They will change the world. They are the builder of the world. Third, that let's pay attention to the company who have fewer than 30 employees. So 30 years and 30 years old and 30 employees, that will can make the world much better.
Interesting, huh? He's a very, very interesting guy, and he's dead right. I mean, the way things are changing right now, you look at driverless cars going forward, other things that were discussed at Davos, artificial intelligence, robotics, and how these things are going to be impacting jobs. And when you talk about inequality and you hear about things like the top 1% of the world owns more than 50% of the world's wealth, while the bottom 50% has less than 1%, it's quite scary the numbers that we are dealing with. And it's going to get worse because the new artificial intelligence, the way that banks are going to start trading, you know, the mechanisms they're going to be using, autonomous vehicles, you know, all these kind of things is putting a tremendous amount of pressure in the world that we're living in today. And how's this for a statistic, Eusebius? According to the Digital Transformation Initiative analysis undertaken by the World Economic Forum and Accenture, they say as much as 60% of the $100 trillion value from digital at stake in the next decade will likely accrue to society instead of business. And you look at what India is doing, for example, how they're digitizing their society, and they're talking about India in the next 10 years possibly getting rid of currency at all, completely. And you look at our country, and we are very slow in transforming these digital initiatives, I believe. We're transforming, but not fast enough, like countries like India. We should be learning a lot from India and what they are doing in their country. And, of course, the other thing that came up in Davos is the basic ground, that people are saying that in the future that we're going to have to give citizens in society X amount of money just to survive, because there aren't going to be enough jobs for everybody.
You know what fascinated me when I saw that in the runner this morning was I sometimes, like in my head, obviously wrongly, you know, no diss of you, you know, I love you to bits, think of this chunk of the week as like, I learned so much about Aki, different world of technology to my interest in politics. But you're so right, when I saw the Davos link, I mean, it's kind of like obvious when you think about it in the examples you've just given, is how technology will impact politics and vice versa. The connection, for example, between lower potential jobs, a debate like basic income grant that people might have to have access to as a result of mechanization and increased shedding of jobs because of the impact of technology. And it's amazing how technology can both help us to problem solve all the issues you've been telling us last year, like in public health that you've learned in the States, and it can also exacerbate new kinds of inequalities.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. But we can actually turn it around, because you think about the fact that if you give people a basic income grant, that money's still coming back into the economy. So it is fueling other businesses along the way, but it's how we handle it in a responsible manner. And this is why I love Davos and the conversations that are being held. And the link that we've got there, by the way, is fantastic. There's some great interviews, there's some great videos, and you really understand where the world is. But if you think that the world is going to not change as fast as we're talking about it, you're very sadly mistaken. And you need to get with the program. Companies need to get with the program. And I suspect some politicians, no names mentioned, are a little bit behind the times. And I'm not talking about our local politicians. So Final one are these magnificent headphones which I've been trialing on an aircraft traveling long-haul flights. These are the Sennheiser Momentum wireless headphones. And I want you to put them over your head and just to feel how comfortable they actually are.
Because I've got a big head. So do you.
That's well, exactly. But what's nice about those is that, you know, the thing is when you wear headphones for a long period of time, your ears actually get sore. Mm. Now, those are so comfortable that they actually cut out the noise. So they've got noise-canceling technology built in, and they really are magnificent in how they cut out the noise and the quality when you start to listen to music and movies and that sort of thing. The sound that comes out of that is pretty crisp. And, you know, I love the quality of the Sennheiser brand. You know, they really have great quality. It's got leather, you know, cushioning around your ears, and it fits comfortably, which
is
what's good about them.
Does it also cut out that funny sound that some of us
hear? The white noise.
It's called white noise, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Does it reduce that as well?
Yes, it does reduce that. It does reduce it. You got to turn it on. But if you're on an aeroplane, for example, it cuts it out completely.
Really?
You know, the one thing I've played with is the Bose Quiet Comfort 35s, which are kind of on the same league at that level. I think the Bose Quiet Comfort 35s do a better noise cancelling. Mm. And you always see them. It's like the go-to device when you travel abroad. They've all got them sitting in the aeroplanes. But having said that, it is like slightly the Bose are slightly better when it comes to that. But the actual quality of the music and the audio, I find that the Sennheiser do a better job of that.
How much?
They're expensive. They're close to 6,500, 7,000 rand.
Reassuringly pricey.
They are expensive, but they're a lovely gift if you have an audiophile in your family.
Is that it, Ducky?
That's it.
You the whole day.
Well,
okay, cool. We'll give him a week for more trinkets to bring into the studio.
Yes. What do you want to listen to next week? You must tell me, and the listeners as well. If there are any things that you want me to specifically cover, you can tweet me at Aki Anastasiou.
Absolutely.
You can send the show an SMS at 31702.
Yes.
You can tweet Eusebius as well, and Eusebius's parody account as well. Oh, you don't have one.
I don't have one yet. Interesting.
Have
I used
you
to have one
a,
years ago.
Yeah. Is it a compliment or a negative to have a parody account?
I think it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
It's a bit of both, and I mean, I've seen them, and I had this horrible dilemma. Maybe you can talk to us about that, what the best strategies are for dealing with them. I saw Rudy Klabi being a better employee than us, and yesterday, hunting on about these fake people.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, do I retweet Rudy because I share their sentiment, or will you just make it more popular?
Exactly. And have you noticed there's no Rudy Klabi parody account either? I think they're just too scared to have one.
Shall we create one?
Just create one and spread. No, I'm too scared. I'm scared of her.
Oh, no, I'm very scared of her as well. Okay, we'll do it again next
Have a lovely day.